This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today is Jim Henderson, 91 years old. He grew up in Diamond Springs in California's gold country, but has spent the last six decades in Novato, just north of San Francisco. There was a brief stint in Modesto worked in, and maybe he sold you some lumber once upon a time. If you go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll find a photo of Jim holding something given to him for what he did serving in a mortar platoon with Company D of the 413th Infantry Regiment, part of the Timberwolves of the 104th Infantry Division in World War II. You'll also find a photo of what I'm going to read to you right now.
This is a citation for the Silver Star Medal, which is not easy to earn in combat. And it says, Staff Sergeant James W. Henderson, then Private, Infantry, Company D, 413th Infantry, United States Army, is awarded the Silver Star Medal for gallantry in action in Germany on 27 November 1944, when one of his comrades was wounded and fell in a completely exposed position, Sergeant Henderson made his way across 75 yards of shell-torn terrain to the wounded man's side and then carried him 100 yards under intense enemy fire to a position of cover where medical aid was available. This gallant act exemplifies the finest of military traditions, reflecting great credit upon Sergeant Henderson and the Armed Forces of the United States. There aren't too many people that have something like that written about them or have that medal that looks like it's still in the original case from 1944 there.
It is.
Well, tell me how that all came about.
Well, first, I'd like to say that there are a lot of people that did things even more than that who probably didn't get a Silver Star, who should have gotten a Silver Star.
And they didn't get it because there was no one to document it?
Right. I assume that that's the case. But I know that there are people that were as deserving or more deserving than I was. We were in the town of Frenz, Germany, and that's F-R-E-N-Z. We were supposed to be providing supporting fire for the other battalion. Our battalion wasn't actually on the line, but we had gone in the morning and were attempting to set up the mortars, and they were throwing everything at us but the kitchen sink. We were trying to dig a hole to put the mortar in to protect ourselves from it while we're firing missions, which was virtually impossible.
Impossible to dig because the ground was so cold?
No, impossible to dig. This was November. The ground hadn't frozen yet, but it was that the shells were coming in so fast, and the Germans apparently had an observer in a church steeple there who was directing fire in any positions that he could spot. Ours happened to be one of them, I guess, but or maybe they were just lucky. But
so basically, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I hear you saying is that because of that observer, the Germans knew exactly where you guys were, but you didn't really know where they were until they started firing on you.
We didn't know where the observer was, and the guns were away from us.
Yeah.
But the observer was right there in the middle of town in a church steeple. Mm-hmm. But they didn't find that out until later.
So all the shells are coming in. It's pretty chaotic. You don't have time to dig this position for your mortar.
Yeah, digging and taking cover all the time. And there was a building adjacent to where we were digging. And when it would get real hot, you'd go into the building and then come back out. He had gone back out and was in the hole digging. As I got to the door of the building to go on out, the shells came in. But I had heard the phone ring or something and thought they were trying to establish a communication for a firing mission or something. I went back, and about the same time the shell hit, and he was wounded. When I went back out, he couldn't move. It had damaged his coxoiliac, I think, or something on the end of his tailbone, and he was semi-paralyzed or paralyzed. I went out then and got him and brought him in.
A few things here. So the phone rings. If the phone didn't ring, you would have been hit too?
I wouldn't have been next to him because I was just leaving the building and there was an open space, but I could have gotten hit, yeah.
So he gets, and what was his name? Do you remember his name?
His name was Brian. What was his first name? Henry Braun. Henry Braun was his name.
So you two had spent a lot of time together.
Oh, yeah. We had, when he had been in Virginia Military Institute, I think, and I don't know where he was in ASDP. I think he had joined the 104th Division when we moved from the desert in Southern California to Camp Carson in at Colorado Springs in March of 1944. So I had had all the training. I had been in the division as long as he had, maybe a little longer by a couple of weeks or something like that.
And you guys had been in the on this crew together for at least weeks, I would imagine, right?
Oh, probably months. We had been together in the mortar platoon from March of 44 until this happened in November.
And I guess the only thing I'm getting at there is, and I'm not saying you wouldn't have done this for a complete stranger, but when you see this guy go down, this is someone that, that you know, that you've been serving with. That
Yeah, it's your buddy. Yeah.
And it probably would have been hard for you not to go after him.
Oh, absolutely.
But that Silver Star citation makes it pretty clear this was a pretty dangerous and daring thing for you to do. I mean, it's not as if they said, okay, we'll stop shelling while you go pick up your buddy.
You don't think about that at the time. As I recall, I didn't think about it at all. What the danger was, it was, hey, you got to get him out of there. He's really in a bad spot. No thought given to personal safety at that point at all.
So you get to him. You realize he can't move. I imagine he's probably bleeding a little bit.
I'm sure he was, because he had been hit in the buttocks, but you weren't examining the wound at that point at all.
You're just trying to get him out of there as fast as you could?
Yeah, get him out of there and back out of where they're shelling.
Was he conscious?
Oh, yeah, he was conscious, as I remember, yeah.
What did he say to you?
I don't think he said anything, honestly, other than that I can't move, or maybe...
How big a guy was he?
He weighed a little bit more than I did. He was a little taller than I was and a little bigger. I was pretty wiry. He probably had 20 pounds on me, maybe a couple of inches.
So you carried a guy who was more than your body weight 100 yards to safety with potholes from artillery shells all around and fire still going off.
You know, I think I kind of drug him, really.
Yeah.
I'm not...
You think some of the practice hauling 4x4s around and the lumber business helped you out there?
I think it was the calisthenics and stuff at basic training, running the obstacle course and things like that, more than... they both helped, probably, but...
Probably a lot of adrenaline, too.
Yeah, yeah. There was definitely more adrenaline than anything else.
So you're dragging him out of there just trying to get to that building that you had come out of?
Yes.
Uh-huh. What did that feel like when you actually made it to the building and got him to the attention that he needed?
Well, you were relieved, definitely relieved. I mean, it was kind of, hey, we made it. Mm-hmm. And now get the medics in here and get him back to the aid station.
And he survived?
Oh, yes. Yeah, he survived. Yeah, he's passed away since, but he survived that. He came back to the division.
And I know it's hard to talk about stuff like this yourself, and I know you're not looking for attention. You didn't ask them to give you that medal. But I imagine that Brian felt pretty grateful to you. Did he ever express gratitude to you after you guys saw each other again?
Oh, yeah, he thanked me, sure. As a matter of fact, his sister had knitted a ski mask for him this winter, and he was wearing the ski mask, and he was actually wearing that ski mask when he was hit. I felt like asking him for it because he was going back to the aid station. But I asked him later whatever happened to that ski mask, and he said that someone had lifted it from him when either he was in the hospital or the field hospital.
You should have asked him for it.
Yeah.
It would have gone to use.
Yeah.
Especially in the months that followed, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And the only reason I bring it up is something tells me, and I'm not trying to put words in his mouth or yours, but I think if I were him, I might have thanked you for saving my life. Did he use those kind of words with you?
I don't recall that at all. But, he didn't get back until pretty much the end of the war. I think it was March. It was probably April. And I saw him after we got back to the States and after we were civilians, saw him several times at reunions. You know, I don't, and I wasn't expecting him to. I'll tell you one thing he did do. His folks had a silk hosiery business. They were doing war work, though, but they were also making still making silk hosiery. And after the war, I asked him to send me a pair of silk stockings for my mother, and he jolly well did that. So.
And maybe it's one of those things that didn't need to be said.
No.
You guys were there. Yeah. You know what happened. But, and again, maybe this isn't an easy one to answer, but what do you think would have happened to him if you had not done what you did?
Well, I would hope that someone else would have gone out there and gotten him. And I think someone would have. He'd have gotten to the battalion aid station somehow.
So the way you describe it, it wasn't that big of a deal.
To me, it wasn't. Not then. No, it was just something that had to be done. Mm-hmm. You do it for your buddy or a friend, whatever.
Because they would do it for you.
Yeah.
Well, feel free to add anything else or tell us any stories that I haven't asked you about. But before I forget, I do want to say thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us a little bit about it. Can you tell me what you're most proud of and what you're most thankful for?
What I'm most thankful for, I'm sure, is my family. Where do you separate thanks and pride? Because I'm equally proud of them, but I'm also thankful for the opportunity of life that I've had. It's been a good life. There have been ups and downs and losses and one thing and another, but those things kind of happen along the way. But don't dwell on them. Put them behind you and get on to what's good, I guess.
Was there anything else we didn't touch on that you want to make sure to include?
Well, there was a time when a sniper was shooting at me, and dumb me, it took about 3 shots before I realized, thank God he was a bad shot, or his sights were off or something. But he took about 3 shots, and we had stopped on top of a hill overlooking the town of Inden. We had gotten kind of lost there. The sniper was firing, and he actually shot the platoon sergeant. The poor man, the medics went to him, but they couldn't evacuate him, and he just laid there and died, bled to death. Today he would have been saved. I mean, in the war, the way they fight wars today, he would have been evacuated, but you couldn't do it then. But the sniper that was shooting at me, he had said, hey, fellas, we were trying to dig in and just dig in a trench for yourself, not the guns or anything, because we weren't going to set the guns up there. I know he took 3 shots at me because when the bullets pass, they make a popping noise. I guess it's the sound barrier or something, but it's like you snap your finger or something like that and it pops. After the first couple, I thought, that guy is shooting at me. The platoon sergeant was probably 100 yards away from me and over to my left-hand side. I didn't know where the guy was, and I couldn't even begin to spot him. But I took my helmet and my entrenching tool and the old Western trick, cowboy trick of raising your hat up out of over the revetment a little bit. Sure enough, then came that third shot. So I just dug a little faster and a little deeper, and thank God I didn't get hit. But he had 2 real good shots at me, and he missed. Why, I don't know, but someone was looking after me.
How close do you think he came?
I don't even want to think about that. I mean,
are we talking inches, feet?
I think it would have probably been less than 12 inches or so.
That's pretty close.
But I don't really know. I mean, he wounded the sergeant, and he could have wounded me.
I'm glad he didn't.
I am too.
Jim's kids and grandkids sure are thankful for that too. And I want to thank Jim's daughter, Maggie Cox of San Luis Obispo, for letting me know about her dad's story. Maggie listens to the show on our affiliate KVEC on California's Central Coast. Go to hometownheroesradio.com if you want to tell me about a veteran you think should be on Hometown Heroes. And don't forget to check out those photos of Jim on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We're out of time for today's program. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.